This weekend starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend with your host, Gordon Deal.
Houston, still building in the floodplain. I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour. Less than a year after devastating floods, Houston is putting up more homes in the path of danger, but will stricter standards contain Mother Nature? Also, lessons about college that you were never taught in high school. Hear it straight from the mouths of college kids. Plus, as hurricane season begins, a look at the booming and risky business of storm chasing and why collecting things like antiques has fallen out of favor.
The attitude of my parents' generation and the attitude of my kids towards beautiful objects, antiques, paintings, fine china, silver cutlery is totally different. My parents and their generation love this stuff. My kids have no use for it.
Yeah. Jonathan Clements at HumbleDollar.com on looking beyond antiques and collectibles. He's here later in the hour. A city walloped by disastrous flooding just months ago is trying to balance the need for new construction in a region short of housing with the civic fear that Houston is returning to its freewheeling ways. There's new construction in northwest Houston, which serves as something of a post-Harvey starting gun that's being built to new, stricter standards. At some point, it's expected that Mother Nature will test those standards, possibly in the coming weeks. It's a story by Scott Wilson, senior national correspondent at The Washington Post. Scott, what's happening?
Yeah, so this is the first real construction, new construction that's going to be happening in Houston since Harvey, you know, really flooded all 22 of the city's bayous last fall. And there are stricter building codes now. Basically, it requires, it requires new homes on floodplains to be built a foot higher than they were previously. The mayor says that these new restrictions would have spared about 82% of the homes that were flooded in Harvey. And yet, you know, as your reaction suggests, there's a lot of people in Houston who think, good Lord, we're doing this all over again. Yeah. And the weather patterns are changing. NOAA, the Federal Weather Administration, basically, has told them to expect more intense periods of rain over the next, you know, 20, 30 years than they've ever had before. Jeez. So, you know, but Houston's growing. And so the mayor says we've got to keep building to keep up with growth. And we're basically... almost our whole city is a floodplain.
Goodness. That's an interesting stat. They feel that 1 foot higher, if your home is 1 foot higher, that would have saved 82% of the homes? Because some of those pictures were a horrific, like water up to some roofs.
Yeah. What I've done is I've boiled it down a little bit, because the old rules were you had to build 2 feet above, you had to build 1 foot above the 100-year floodplain. So a 100-year storm means basically there's a 1% chance that that storm has a chance of hitting in any given year. Now what they're saying is you have to build 2 feet above the 500-year floodplain.
Okay.
And that's about a 0.2%. The problem is why that sounds much bigger. NOAA has told them that basically what was your 500-year floodplain is now your 100-year floodplain.
Okay.
Because of the way the weather is going to change. You're going to get 11, you know, inches of rain much more frequently than you used to. And so it's really boiled down. It's really just a foot higher than what they had. But that's what the mayor, that's what the Public Works Department has said. Yeah, would have spared about 8 of 10 of those flooded homes.
How about that? We're speaking with Scott Wilson, senior national correspondent at The Washington Post. He's written a piece entitled Fresh from Hurricane Harvey's Flooding, Houston Starts to Build Anew in the Floodplain. Does that mean that there are a lot of steps from, say, ground level to get into your front door?
Yes. And what's an interesting thing about being in Houston and driving through some of these neighborhoods that have raised houses in recent years you know, Harvey was just the latest in a bunch of really bad storms that the city has experienced in the last 3 or 4 years. You already drive through neighborhoods where some homes have been razed and some haven't. So you get this, it's almost like a Lego kind of effect of some tall, some short, some tall. And yeah, it is. You know, there are steps. I stood on a porch of a last fall and of a home that had been raised 2 feet since the previous flooding. And the water came right up to the edge of the porch and across the street. You know, those houses had all been completely flooded.
Yeah. Jeez. Will these new codes in any way, I guess, or just the new building in general, make things worse for the existing homes that have not been raised elsewhere?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And it probably won't make things worse in the sense that, you know, channeling water or anything like that, but it will certainly, you know, it will probably depress property values of homes that haven't been raised. So you can imagine going into a neighborhood and seeing one home that's, you know, 3 feet above the ground, and the home that you're looking to buy is at ground level, and you're wondering what's going on here.
So there
is that, and there's money in Houston and at the federal government to try to raise some of those homes. FEMA is, you know, they're working with FEMA to change some rules to get a little more flexibility to use that money to raise homes rather than to just buy the homes and basically tear them down, which is what that money's used for now. But it's pretty complicated. But yeah, it's quite a process that's underway there.
Will these new developments or apartment buildings or whatever have any kind of new drainage? Is there any such thing happening?
There is some drainage, but you know what is sort of upsetting to some is that this was a golf course, so it was kind of a big green sponge in the middle of a residential area. And now it's going to be homes, so you're not going to get that natural absorption effect of a big golf course. But there is a lot of channeling going on, and a lot of specs that the builders have to build to. But you know, until a storm hits, they're really not going to know.
Thanks, Scott. Scott Wilson, senior national correspondent at The Washington Post. 13 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. First full weekend of June. Got a kid in high school with plans on going to college. There are probably tons of things they're not learning to prepare them for the next 4 years. Mark Beal, managing partner at the PR firm Taylor in New York City, has written a new book from students' perspectives entitled 101 Lessons They Didn't Teach You in High School About Going to College. He tapped his resources as a part-time professor at Rutgers University. Mark, what have you done?
Well, you know, a year ago, as you said, I you know, had so many questions from students about how do I transition to a career, how do I get a job, how do I conduct an interview, and I answered all those questions and converted those into lessons for the book last year, 101 Lessons They Never Taught You in College. But these students have so much to offer. You know, I look at them, they're all members of this, you know, Generation Z. They've got such great insights and advice, and I thought, why not offer advice to the next generation of college students, you know, current high school students, and give them real-world insights as to what it's like to be on a college campus today, the experience today, all the things you just take advantage of. And so I crowdsourced college students across the country, and they quickly came back with more than 101 lessons.
That's really cool. So did it surprise you sometime that it seemed that some of them were actually paying attention to what was happening in life?
Yes. Well, I think when it comes to their college experience, they are, to your point, they're immersed in that.
Yeah.
They may not know everything that's going on outside the campus, you know, in news, in the real world, but when it comes to college, they know exactly what's happening, know exactly where they may have failed, how to succeed, and I just think it's, you know, unprecedented that current college students are giving kind of a manual of lessons and advice to high school seniors and juniors and saying, don't make the same mistakes. Here's how to do it. Here's how I did it. You know, this will help you tremendously.
One of the ones that jumped out at me was lesson 31 from this woman at Pace University. She said one of the easiest things to do in college is to follow the pack. Don't do it. She was talking about being a leader. What was she saying there?
Yeah, she just graduated from Pace University, and she said, it's so easy on campus to, you know, kind of just fall in with the group. You know, my classmates or my roommates aren't going to class today. They're going to sleep in. I'm going to sleep in. Or we're not going to go to this club or to this activity or do this. And take the exact opposite approach. You said lead by example. go to class, go to guest lectures, join clubs. And she goes, you'll inspire others to follow you, and it'll have kind of this contagious effect where others will be like, well, I should be doing that too. I should be taking full advantage of everything that's here on campus and not just be kind of class, sleep, party.
We're speaking with Mark Beal, managing partner of the PR firm Taylor, based in New York City. He's written another book called 101 Things They Never Taught You in High School About Going to College. It's a follow-up to a book he wrote a year ago called 101 Things They Never Taught You About in College. What surprised you when some of these submissions started coming in? Was there one that you just thought, man, I never considered that?
Well, the one that seems to get a lot of attention is Lesson 72, which it doesn't require a party to have fun. And I know the exact student who gave me that lesson, she graduated a week ago from college. And the point was, you know, you hear about college and you hear about classes and parties. And what she's saying is just today's college experience is so much more. It's not just about waking up and going to classes and not just about a Thursday or Friday night party. There is so much your campus, no matter big or small across this country, has to offer you in the form of, again, guest lectures, clubs, extracurricular activities, community involvement. She goes, take advantage of all of that. Take advantage of all that, because you don't want to graduate and look back and say, boy, I didn't take advantage of any of these things. I went to class and I went to parties and that was it. So she made a point just to say that there's so much going on today on college campuses. Take advantage of it. You're paying tuition. You're paying to be there.
Yeah.
Take advantage of everything and start the day you arrive on campus. Don't wait till sophomore, junior year. Start that freshman year.
Is it harder than when you and I went to school together, or is it just different? Or both?
As far as the college experience,
yeah.
I think it's definitely just different. When you and I went, you know, I laugh now, but we didn't have the internet. We didn't have email. We didn't have social media.
Right.
So I think the networking aspect is, I'd say it, but I believe it's easier, right? There's more channels to network. There's more ways to find someone's information and be able to get in touch with them. And I do think, as you know, the student said, there's just so much going on campus for you to take advantage of, where you can meet others, you can meet guest lecturers, you can network more and more than I think we ever had the opportunity to. So I think it's just a better opportunity, a more enriching opportunity. Now, again, as long as you go with the mindset of let's fully leverage every asset and every experience my college has to offer me.
Thanks, Mark. Mark Beal, managing partner at the PR firm Taylor in New York City. Again, the book is called 101 Lessons They Didn't Teach You in High School About Going to College. 22 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. If you want to take your business to the top, take it to a top 10 most improved state for business, Michigan. Contact michiganbusiness.org today. As the U.S.'s tornado season kicks into high gear, so does the booming but risky business of taking paying passengers on storm-chasing tours in the nation's Tornado Alley. The 1996 movie Twister, right? And the 2007 to 2011 Discovery Channel reality TV series Storm Chasers have helped fuel the growing popularity of the tours in a trend that worries some safety experts. Even Wall Street Journal reporter Jim Carlton got in on the act, doing some chasing in Oklahoma. Jim, what'd you do?
Yeah, you know, it's strange. I was in the Texas Panhandle about 3 weeks ago on another story, and I just happened to see on Facebook that there was a storm-chasing tour nearby, so I decided to check it out. And sure enough, there's this whole cottage industry of storm chasers that are allowing tourists to basically tag along and go into the belly of the beast and chasing tornadoes and severe storms, baseball-sized hail, you name it. And it's insane, but it's happening. So it's a legit business.
Wow. I can't even imagine what kind of waiver you must have to sign before you hop in one of those vehicles.
It's a three-page waiver, and number one, Gordon, you have to acknowledge that you are riding at your own risk. So people go in with their eyes open.
Holy cow! So what have some of those folks experienced?
Well, the day I went, we met up. So they drive all over the place. They'll meet like in Oklahoma City on a Friday, and they'll go for like 7 days in the back of a van. They travel hundreds of miles per day. Each day they're going to travel to wherever the radar shows going to be the worst weather. And the day I went with them in western Oklahoma, there was gigantic thunderstorms, lightning, tornado warnings, you name it, a horrific storm.
Mm. Any deaths or injuries?
Well, I mean, not to the tourist yet, although last year three storm chasers died when they actually their vehicles collided in Texas chasing a tornado. And in 2013, three more died when they got actually too close to a tornado and got swept up like, Dorothy's house in the Wizard of Oz. So it is a definitely a risky occupation.
Holy cow. What does something like that cost?
Well, I mean, it's not cheap. I mean, it's up to $3,800. Would you believe that?
Wow.
I mean, you can go for one day, $300, but it's, the average is like, $2,500. But, people love this, Gordon. I talked to a lady who came all the way from Australia. This is her fourth one. And, yes, she hasn't seen a twister yet. They don't guarantee that you'll see a twister, but they talk about, well, the longer you stay with this, the better your odds are. And so on the trip, she got close to a twister but didn't actually see one.
Was she the one who I think was happy that she saw some hail?
Oh, yeah, she saw some lightning, and she was ecstatic that we were driving through this just hellacious lightning storm, hail, a golf ball-sized. There was a Japanese film crew along, and they were actually fascinated with hail. They'd never seen hail before. Uh-huh. And one of their producers actually was looking up at the heavens and got hit in the eye with a piece of hail, so we were worried about her, but she's okay.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Jim Carlton. He's written a piece entitled, Storm Chasing Tours Become Big and Risky Business. I can imagine this is going to take really one bad incident, right, where there's some sort of regulation or rules crackdown, or is that in the works now or what?
Well, right now, I mean, the big concern, really, I mean, believe it or not, when I did my, they have to give you a safety presentation, and most of the safety tips are about traffic. They're worried more about other storm chasers, and I mean, the storm chasers are all over the place, and so when you get out of the vehicle, look out, look both ways, et cetera. But yes, I mean, it seems like it's an accident waiting to happen, and when it does happen, it could be, tough for this little industry.
Thanks, Jim. Wall Street Journal reporter Jim Carlton. With only about half the normal number of twisters so far this year, Jim says the tornado season has gotten off to its slowest start in years. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. You don't often find the words business and friendly in the same sentence, let alone the same state. Unless, of course, you're talking about Michigan. Michigan's business-friendly practices help them become a leader in industries that range from agriculture and cybersecurity to aerospace and advanced manufacturing. In fact, Michigan is ranked among the top 10 states for major new and expanded facilities, which makes Michigan more than business-friendly. It makes Michigan business smart. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. I'm Gordon Deal. Coming up this half hour, the fading interest in antiques. We'll find out what's behind that. Also, what's better than pressure washing the patio? Apparently, watching other people's videos of it. And things you didn't know about the Stanley Cup. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. Well, if you're worried about what exactly Amazon's Echo-connected speaker has been recording in your home, there's an easy way to find out. Amazon makes all recent recordings available for listening in the companion Alexa app for iOS and Android. What's been stored and how to hear it? From USA Today technology columnist Jefferson Graham. Jeff, what did you find?
We all know that Alexa has recorded everything that we've said, innocuous, and I'm going to have to move a little bit because I'm near her and she's going to hear me. So let me get away from her. So if you say, Alexa, play this song, Alexa, turn on this radio station, Alexa, play this podcast, you've been recorded.
Yeah.
And that's fine. That's fine. But I went in and listened to the recordings. They recorded me for 2.5 years. I had an archive of me saying, stop, play. And if I was to say, Gordon, I just did an article about Alexa, you won't believe what I heard.
Yeah.
Well, they recorded that. They recorded that. If I said, I think I'm going to go to the store today, I think I'll ask Alexa how much something is, and then I'll go to Best Buy, and then I'll stop by my mother's house. Well, they recorded all that, too. So that's where it's weird.
It's
they record every mention of that word.
Even out of context.
Out of context.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you were able to go back and listen to it and view transcripts of what was said, both?
Transcripts and the audio recording, which they have kept in there.
Jeez. So how do you see it? What's the process, I guess, if somebody wanted to go look?
Oh, the process is really easy. You just go into your Alexa app on your smartphone. You go to the settings. Then you go to history. And then there's a section called recordings. And they're all there.
Mm. So I know this was prompted by this one Echo user who had a message recorded and sent incorrectly to some contact. But how did it wind up getting sent in the first place?
Okay, first of all, this person set up calls. So if you set up calls, you can use this Echo speaker to make calls. And then if you put in your contacts list, and if I say, hey, Alexa, call Gordon, it will make a call, and we can have a conversation through the speaker. Well, it mistakenly heard something, and then it mistakenly heard something else, and the next thing you know, a colleague got a transcript of her kitchen conversation. Mm. Not a transcript, but a recording. And that's how the controversy started. Amazon has insisted over and over again that something like that would never happen, but it did.
Wow.
Because it's an eye-opener.
We're speaking with Jefferson Graham, USA Today technology columnist, also host of a podcast called Talking Tech, and he's written an interesting piece entitled How to Listen to What Amazon's Alexa Has Recorded in Your Home. You referenced it there, but, I mean, Amazon can do better, right? Do we expect some announcements about how this might be fixed?
I expect that their engineers are working overtime to make sure that this PR nightmare doesn't continue. I don't think it helps sales. But I'll also tell you, Gordon, I have just told you that everything you said was being recorded. I told you can go back and listen to it, and you're going to say, I'm shocked.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't think you're going to change anything. And this is no knock against you. I'm using Gordon as the
right.
as the illustrative for everybody. I don't think anybody's going to change. I don't think they care. They think it's terrible, but they're not going to stop.
Yeah.
They're not going to stop using the Echo speaker. It's just like, you know, Facebook is tracking everything you do. You know it. I know it. Have you stopped using Facebook? Probably not.
Mm. Nice, Jeff. That's Jefferson Graham, USA Today technology columnist, also offers a podcast called Talking Tech. It is 21 minutes now in front of the hour on this weekend. Thanks for being with us. What happened to the idea of antiques and other collectibles holding value? Personal finance expert Jonathan Clements, editor and founder of HumbleDollar.com, says in the era of things like IKEA furniture and leased cars, the whole concept is fading. Jonathan, what do you mean?
Well, what spurred this actually was going up to my in-laws. My in-laws are looking at downsizing, and so my wife and I went up there, and we were going around their house telling them what we would like to ultimately inherit, which is a weird thing to do. Anybody who's done that knows
it's a
weird thing to do. But also what struck both my wife and me as we did this was that even as we saw so many things in their house that we loved, we weren't at all sure that our kids were going to like them when the time came for us to pass them along. You know, the attitude of my parents' generation and the attitude of my kids towards beautiful objects, antiques, paintings, fine china, silver cutlery is totally different. My parents and their generation love this stuff. My kids have no use for it.
Yeah. Well, so what happened along the way, I guess?
I think that a couple of things have happened. One is that what we think of as stores of value has changed. You know, this notion that, you know, fine rugs had value, that antiques had value, that your household possessions were, you know, part of your wealth. That's really gone away. People become much more comfortable owning stocks, bonds, just numbers on an account statement. And it's gone beyond even that. I mean, nobody even gets stock certificates anymore, right? We have online accounts. We see numbers on the computer screen, and we have faith that there is value there. So as we become more comfortable owning securities, owning stocks and bonds, we put less value in physical objects, in antiques, fine rugs, bone china, and so on.
Hmm. We're speaking with Jonathan Clements, editor and founder of HumbleDollar.com. He's written a piece entitled Beyond Stuff. So what about things like stamps or coin collections, baseball cards, in comparison, I don't know, say rugs and old lamps or something?
I think it's all pretty much same deal, Gordon. You know, these are things that we collect because they give us psychic income, so we shouldn't assume that they're going to have a great real rate of return over time. And in fact, there was a study done looking at the last 118 years, and the return on stuff, those stamps, fine bottles of wine, you know, antiques, has been somewhat less than 3% a year more than inflation. Meanwhile, stocks have been well over 5%. Mm. So the return on the real return on stocks has been almost twice that on these collectibles. And I expect going forward that the gap is going to be even larger. The return on collectibles is going to be lower because we are more comfortable owning stocks and bonds, and we are, you know, and we don't see, or at least my kids' generation, don't see the value in these physical possessions. And to some extent, I think this is an argument they're going to win. I mean, this is the IKEA generation. They do not want our stuff. They want to be mobile. They want to be able to pack up and move easily. And when they do that, they just take the IKEA furniture and they put it out on the sidewalk.
So the lesson here is, or the takeaway is, don't be offended with, then I'll want your stuff later on.
Yeah, I mean, that actually is. It is a little bothersome when they don't really want your stuff. But what the real lesson here is, you know, if you're saving for the future, if you want to make your wealth grow, you know, don't buy antiques, don't buy stamps, don't buy baseball cards. Instead, you know, put your money in the markets. That's where you're going to get the decent long-run return.
Thanks, Jonathan. Jonathan Clements, again, the website is humbledollar.com. 14 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend. Thanks for being with us. Online videos of pressure washers spraying down things like dirty driveways, sidewalks, roofs, siding, and cars are gaining steam. Wall Street Journal reporter Ellen Byron says viewers say they feel instant gratification watching grime vanish without having to lift a finger themselves except to click on a video. Ellen, what have you found?
Well, I'm finding that a lot of people love watching other people pressure wash their houses, their driveways, sidewalks, decks, cars, as a way to relax.
As a way to relax, but nothing's happening to their own patio or car or siding or walkway.
Yeah, all they're doing is clicking on a video, but they say that they feel this instant gratification watching grime vanish. You know, when you're using one of these high-pressure sprayers, they can blast off dirt and grime and debris so fast, and they make really crisp lines that people say make for a very exciting transformation.
These are the people who insist on having lines in their carpeting when they vacuum, too, probably.
I have a feeling. And maybe the videos of those will pick off soon, too. I'll watch for that. Yeah, because it's just a calm, steady progress.
Wow.
And I guess when you don't have that in your day-to-day life, you can click on a video and find it there.
How about that? We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Ellen Byron. She's written a funny piece about power washing. It's entitled, "What's Better Than Pressure Washing the Patio? Watching Someone Else Do It." You said, too, though, more homeowners are actually adding these pressure washer machines to their outdoor equipment arsenal.
Yeah, they are becoming much more affordable. I found some on the lower price range of about $150. And then, of course, you can go way into the thousands of dollars. The higher the pressure of a machine, typically the more expensive it costs. But they are becoming more affordable for homeowners to have their own rather than look to a professional. And they're becoming easier to use. So for a long time, the electric power washers, which are the lowest maintenance type, they weren't very strong, but the pressure of those easy-to-maintain versions are getting more powerful, and that's appealing to people as well.
Wow.
And the product makers told me that so many people are really using their backyards and thinking of their patios almost as another living room and socializing there. And so just like you would vacuum before company comes over, more people like to pressure wash their patio before having some fun in their backyard.
How about that? Yeah, there are different power levels, though. I would imagine you can't do to your patio or driveway what you're doing to your car, I guess.
Exactly, and please be careful about that. People have been posting what happened to, let's say, their arm when they got in the way of the blast. Some can be very strong. I did talk to Briggs & Stratton, and they make a 7-in-1 nozzle that lets you adjust it as you go. And one executive there said, "We like to say it is gentle enough to clean your car, strong enough to clean your driveway."
Okay, wow. But not in any situation for use on a younger, annoying sibling, like if you're a tween.
No.
Yeah.
Or a dog or anything like that. These are truly outdoor power equipment machines. And not a squirt gun, although the joy with which some people have been telling me they use it, it must bring back some sort of nostalgia of squirt guns. But not for the kids.
Thanks, Ellen. Wall Street Journal reporter Ellen Byron. It is 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend. Thanks for spending time with us. Things you didn't know about the Stanley Cup from the For the Win blog at USA Today. Number one, it weighs 35 pounds and stands nearly 3 feet tall. Number two, its real name is the Dominion Hockey Challenge Cup, donated by Lord Stanley, Governor General of Canada in the 1890s. Number three, Lord Stanley bought it for the equivalent of about $49. Number four, the bowl at the top of the trophy can hold 14 cans of beer. Number five, the Hockey Hall of Fame says the 125-year-old trophy is on the road 325 days a year, been to every state except Hawaii. Number six, it no longer has the name of every player on it. Every 13 years, one ring of the cup is replaced to make room for more names. The removed ring goes to the Hall of Fame. Number seven, the original bowl on top was replaced in 1970 because it was too brittle. Number eight, the names on the trophy are stamped, actually not engraved. Number nine, spelling errors include team names and player names. Number 10, there's actually a second Stanley Cup. A replica stays in the hall. The real one travels. And number 11, the trophy has the names of players, coaches, management, and staff printed on it. The only sports trophy that does that. I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.